Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here, sitting across from me.
My cousin Tino is here.
And we were expecting a caller today, and we were going to be discussing utopias.
Fascinating guy, Eric Olin Wright.
And we're still hoping we may get a call from him.
Yeah.
Utopia is a word coined originally by Sir Thomas More in 1516. So it's an old idea, utopia. And it means... He used a Greek word and he put no in front of place, so it means no place. So utopias don't exist. The exact same word, utopia, it can be pronounced to mean good place. So it means both no place that exists in the world, and it means a good place. It's a vision of a good place.
And that's what Eric Olin Wright dealt with.
And Mike and I were talking about it before the show. It's so much easier to believe in dystopias. Everybody believes in these paranoid visions, and some of them are very illuminating. I'm thinking 1984, Animal Farm. Everybody believes in dystopias, but nobody seems interested in utopias.
Well, so many of the modern movies, I mean, the Hunger Games and so on, are just incredibly popular. It's a real negative view of the future and of things. And that's where Eric Olin Wright comes in. So we're doing a positive Memorial Day show this
right,
morning, at least a holiday show.
I'm thinking, Mike, that the people who have a utopian vision are people on the far right, libertarians and stuff. They believe government is evil, and the less government you have, the better everything will be. You just get government out of the way, and everything will be just fine. And all these apparent contradictions of wealth and poverty, unequal economic development, unfairness will all disappear. The market will take care of everything on its own.
Yeah, I don't know that libertarianism has that view. It's more I thought, you know, you take care of, you know, pull your up by your own bootstraps, you take care of yourself kind of thing, where Olin Wright is talking about pure socialism, a different approach to socialism. He calls it an alternative to the alternatives. And to take this at least a little bit sequentially, going from the problems with capitalism, I know that's a terrible thing to say, but there are the inequalities of capitalism, which we see all around us, that the rest of the world, at least, can look at and point at and say, you know, capitalism has its limitations. And one of the things that capitalism limits is democracy, which I find to be a fascinating concept. Everybody knows this. We know that equal rights, egalitarianism is limited by capitalism.
The Koch brothers have millions, if not billions, of dollars to spend on elections, and you guys don't out there, and we don't.
In a place where money buys elections, that's a problem. In a place where money didn't have such big influence on elections, maybe that wouldn't be such a problem.
But money does.
Well,
and
yeah.
Some people have a lot more money than others, and when they use it politically, and there's not much in the way of constraints on that, that means that capitalism undercuts kind of purer form of democracy. We're referring to capitalism. It's often referred to as free enterprise. I mean, I know that the conservatives have sent little memos around, never refer to capitalism because people don't like the term.
Right.
Refer to free enterprise because it sounds much better.
That's right. That's right.
But I do think that there are visions. So we have the whole economic system.
What's the name of this guy's book, though?
Collapse. And at the same time, the response to it is, I mean, we have the banking system collapses because of under-regulation, and the response is to have even less regulation rather than more regulation. So when we have this economic troubles, instead of people looking one way, they look entirely the other, looking entirely backward. But to get to Eric Olin Wright's book, it's called Envisioning Real Utopias. And so as I said earlier, you know, a utopia is a place that's no place. envisioning, we usually think of imagining a utopia. You can find 1,000 science fiction books imagining a utopia or a dystopia. So envisioning real utopias, it seems a kind of contradictory in terms.
He makes a big deal out of the word real, because obviously there's been lots of utopias tried, as you mentioned, since for hundreds of years, probably thousands. But those that provide social justice and political justice are rare and are still experimenting. So one of the things you were referring to and that he refers to strongly was the political justice aspect of his brand of socialism as opposed to capitalism or the free market.
Yeah, I mean, one question you can ask, democracy first or are we capitalist first?
Well, yeah, right, and exactly, and political.
What's the fundamental value in American society? Is it democracy and participation, or is it capitalism? And capitalism is this very powerful economic system that delivers goods. And I think I was reading an economist at Berkeley, and the society's called socialist societies, which Eric Wright wouldn't agree that they're socialist. They produce about a third of the goods of a capitalist version. So you compare South Korea and North Korea, you compare East Germany and West Germany. They're not delivering prosperity for the people.
Right.
Even when they distribute stuff more fairly, which is a very iffy process because you have these secretive social structures built up and where the political elite then is still the economic elite under socialism, just like it is under capitalism.
Just like it is here.
Yeah.
And that's what some people say. The Apple has been in the news recently for avoiding $9 billion in taxes. But
aren't they just doing what capitalists are supposed to do?
But the United States provides a system where the Koch brothers and Apple can really, really thrive. In other words, we don't have systems in place that limit their ability so much, and therefore they should pay as many taxes as they possibly can, or at least pay a fair share, because without the systems that we have set up, their incomes would not be nearly what they are.
Well, I mean, this is what where the president got in trouble when he said, you didn't build that.
And right.
They took that quotation out of context. But what he meant was, the road to your factory was built by the public, the transportation system, the railroads that helped America develop weren't built entirely by capitalism or companies. They were subsidized from the government in the beginning. In fact, the U.S. government bought the entire Western United States or captured it through warfare. It was at once, people talk about private property, but the whole Western United States was all at one time was all government property. It was all public land. And it's been divided and separated out into private parcels. But it starts out as public land, as something that was acquired by the federal government, not by state government, not by local government. And that's because the government in the end, if it's working right, represents what people want. It represents the products of democracy. So I think what I would say, Mike, and this, if you can agree with me or disagree with me, is when this economic crash happens, everybody, the dominant talk is this libertarian utopianism. We can return to basically the 18th century or the 19th century. And if we just do this, everything will be fine and people won't have to think about anything. I mean, that's the original response to this. And then the response from the left has really been, if the businesses and the manufacturers do things that crash the economy, then we need to regulate them so they don't do that. If you regulate them too much, you cripple the sort of economic engine of capitalism. If you don't do it enough, you get these unnecessary crashes in economic. But I think I think that what Eric Wright then is talking about is something beyond that. And he's saying, are there ways forward? And he's a socialist. He says he's an analytical socialist.
Right.
To us, you know, old guys who have heard socialists talk, he doesn't sound much like a socialist, right?
Well, he doesn't, yeah, exactly. He doesn't use the old fashioned terms. He doesn't sound radical at all. That's one of the reasons we were attracted to this guy and we wanted to have him on the show. Is because he uses he's kind of a 21st century socialism for sure.
But what you were talking about,
one of the things he brings up that doesn't there's eliminatable forms of human suffering. Everything that I keep hearing about from the libertarians and everything else doesn't talk about what Olin Wright talks about, the eliminatable forms of human suffering. And right now we're seeing education in a shambles, as far as I'm concerned, at least public education. Private education is going where it's going, but that it leaves a lot of people behind. Healthcare, when it is basically a socialist system. I mean, the American military has found this out many years ago. You know, one of America's best socialist institutions is the military.
Yeah, I know that my dear departed relatives were constantly railing against socialism and spent their whole life in the military, which back in those days was an entirely socialistic system. I mean, from buying your food, you can, you know, in the old days, you buy a car through the military.
I bought my first car through the military. We don't 10%.
Yeah, and you get Delaware tags and save a bunch of money, right?
But it's the forms of human suffering, and then that's the factor that I like seeing factored into Eric Olin Wright's socialist utopia. Now, it took guts even just to use that term, because both of those terms, and he has a whole book dedicated to it and more and a few articles.
It's interesting for someone to talk positively about socialism,
yeah,
when everywhere in the world everyone seems to be running away from socialism as quickly as they possibly can.
Right.
I mean, you look at China announced this week that they're taking the government out of certain private sector stuff. They're getting more capitalist. They're already, despite the being a communist country, really a capitalist country, and now they're moving more in that direction because that seems to be the economic engine that produces prosperity, at least prosperity for some. And you see the same thing happening in China, which is supposedly communist. You see in the U.S., which is fantastic wealth as well as power concentrated in a few hands.
Well, I think doing homage to our missing compatriot here, Bill Timmerman, he would say that the China is still struggling through the failed system, the Soviet system of socialism. You know, and that's the other thing. I mean, the people have the major vision we have of a socialist economy is the failed Soviet system, and China is just throwing off still some vestiges of that because it's a failed system.
So we get called the socialist a lot, and anybody who goes to the left, I don't know of Richard Nixon's ghost is called a socialist, but socialism actually has a meaning. So when we're looking at society and we're seeing what's wrong with it, you're seeing the maldistribution of wealth, we're seeing a country that doesn't distribute health care to everybody. And part of it's political. In North Carolina, they don't want to expand Medicaid. That'll keep, 500,000 people from having Medicare?
Right.
And medical support? I mean, that seems extraordinarily cruel. But that's the logic of capitalism. They should take care of themselves.
Well, that's it.
The
logic
of money.
Capitalism talks about not having socialized medicine, and it destroys the environment. The capitalism is an antithetical to supporting the environment, because there are resources out there to be exploited, and that's how money is made.
So liberals think that what you have to do is you have to modify this powerful system and force it to work in the public interest. So it makes sense from a company's point of view to dump all their sludge in some river and have the public clean it up, or nobody cleaned it up. So what you need are regulations to control this. So what Eric Wright, we thought was really interesting, was he's not looking at reforms of like how can we control this powerful but an engine that produces lots of inequalities and unfairnesses. He's looking at, are there alternatives to it? Are there different ways of organizing businesses, people, and so forth in such a way that that you're not just controlling and modifying capitalism, making more human, but you're moving to some newer vision.
Well, yeah, okay. To try to summarize, he talks about all of the processes. In other words, there's the socialism. There's a huge economy absent the state. So we have all of this, even without a state, like you mentioned, you have a thriving economy. He talks about Quebec. He said there's 10,000 social structures that already further the economy. And so you take the state out of it, you still have this thriving social economy going. And so he talks about statist socialism is dead. He said a few socialists today believe that a statist controlled economy has a shot. In other words, the economy's got to be controlled socially by those people who are involved in it. And so he's devised this kind of interesting method to capitalize. And he talks about British Columbia, he talks about Quebec, where they have taken steps to recognize that there's an economy working here in Sedona that's on a social level. I don't want to say a black market, but on a non-state level, we have an economy going here. All communities do. Now he's saying you can rely more on that economy and have those things and remove some of those problems of capitalism.
Right, and what I thought was one of the interesting, I was looking at the conclusion of his book, and one of the things I thought was interesting is he said, socialism, capitalism, there's no guarantees. There's no way to put everything on automatic. That's the way I read what he's saying.
That's right.
In other words, suppose you change the structure so they're much more beneficial to people. You're still going to have to be active. You're still going to have to be intelligent. You're still going to have to work with all those structures. You can't design a system where nobody has to think anymore. Nobody has to monitor. And you can't design, according to what I read his book, and I think the final thing is, you can't design a pure socialist system, pure capitalism system, a pure what he calls statism, which would be like the Soviet Union.
Right.
None of the pure systems work. Everything has to be a hybrid. But can you come up with a hybrid that moves us to a different level? See, folks, the thing is, everybody's given up on different visions of how we can move forward in the future, economically and politically, except the far right, who has this bizarre retreato ideas. So the question is, are there ways to move fundamentally forward to a better economic system that's actually different than what we have now? And if you think that's possible, then how would you do it? I think is the way I read a lot of what we're talking about. So it's one thing to have a vision, and I think he calls it envisioning rather than imagining.
Exactly.
He calls it a real utopia. So he's looking for examples. In other words, a small example of a cooperative in a Basque country in Spain. He's looking at the way a particular city in South America runs itself. He's looking at these small pieces where individuals have much, much more control over what they're doing. Because, you know, people talk about the oppressive government, but you spend most of your lives working for a company, and they tell you 10 times more what to do than any government ever does.
Right.
We're controlled by the companies, and it's efficient because there's a final arbiter. You know, the boss finally decides. If he makes the wrong decision, your company goes to hell.
Right.
And if he makes a good decision, then everybody prospers, and he prospers a little more. Is there some way to move beyond that? I think when you look at the science fiction stuff, you can envision a society wealthy enough that people are not really working, mostly motivated by money. And I'm thinking in Sedona, which is a huge retirement community, we have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people are putting in hours and hours of free time volunteering.
Yeah.
Volunteerism. Now, if suppose someone is volunteering in the National Forest, the bad side of that is it's cutting out a paid job. The good side of it is the Forest Service doesn't have any money and it needs the volunteers to do everything. So we have a system where people are distributing food banks. Somebody's volunteering for the food bank. Somebody's volunteering. And these are mostly retirees who already have a guaranteed income of one kind or another from savings, let's say, or even from Social Security. And they have time to make decisions on what they do with their time that are not pressured by the need to make an immediate living.
Right. Well, and he talks about that, those, what you're talking about, and that power rooted in a civil society, that a working 21st century socialism can come out of that, out of society rather than from a government, where, like you say, people spend, the whole structure is required on work, is based on work, and you can't stop working to stay home and collect your social welfare checks. That's not this kind of socialism. So envisioning this kind of socialism is not that kind of socialism. But he talks about that even that we are straining toward that. As I recall in the conclusion of his work, that as we strain toward a political equality and a social equality and an economic equality, that everything gets better. And we recognize that this milieu, this huge social economic system that we have going, with or without government, as I'm just recognizing it and capitalizing on that engine that's running anyway, and we're just kind of not using it to advance the mankind, our social systems.
So I think the thing, folks, that they might take away from this is that we've gotten to the point where we can't seem to imagine anything other than variations on capitalism. And you have, on the one hand, I guess Somalia, where people are shooting each other and selling stuff at the same time. And you have the other, Sweden, where you have a social democracy. Yeah. You have the economy controlled. You have high taxes. You have a very much, much more economic equality than we have in the U.S. So there are these varieties of things. But is there a way that we can organize work and accomplish things that's more democratic and fairer and doesn't generate the downside of capital? Well, maybe there is and maybe there isn't. But I think it's what we liked about Eric's book was that he was thinking about whether there was. And he thought about it. It's a work of decades. And he's thought about a lot of different ways to try to achieve a better society. And you can agree with him or disagree with him. But I think that there's a failure of imagination now. We have the right just charging off into sort of crazy stuff, and we have everybody else believing that nothing can be really, really different, that we can make small improvements here. Now, that may be right, but we don't question it. And I think that's the problem. We don't question whether it's just a matter of, so we don't have enough medical care. It's not getting to people, so we have affordable health care now. It's a step in the right direction.
Step in the right direction.
But it's not it's not a real complete solution to the problem. And so everyone believes that we can only take small steps solving small problems, and that there's not a change in the way we think and do things that's going to be part of that.
Well,
now, that could be correct, right, Mike?
But, yes, yeah, that there's some sort of something we can do collectively about human suffering, and that's what, affordable health care and programs like that, and to further, the security, both economically and physically, of our fellow human beings and ourselves. We want to take a break, I think, from Eric Olin Wright's book, Envisioning
Real Utopias. Envisioning Real Utopias.
And we did want to offer something positive today, and I think we've done that, because we do a lot of negative on this show. But we also want to talk about
this. I think that's true, Mike. We spend a lot of time. We wanted to do the show because we wanted to suggest there might be ways forward and stuff. We spend a lot of time talking about really crazy crap
about the state
Agenda 21.
Yes,
we believe we have to do that. We'll talk about the Benghazi pseudo scandal. We'll talk about all these things because that's what, where the public dialogue is. Right. But we're always, you know, we're in, always in counter punch mode, except that we don't hit anybody.
good way to put it. But we are going to have, we are letting you, making you aware of a state of the state event right here in Sedona. Sunday, June 9th at 3 p.m. Sunday, June 9th at 3 p.m., Angela LaFever has invited up four state legislators to talk about what's going on in the, at the state government. And we have it, we're calling it the State of the State. Steve and I are going to moderate it, so you can hear more of our intellectual babble. And see if you can sort it out.
These
there.
These are non-tinfoil hat.
Yes, right.
Legislatures, legislators in Arizona.
The event is going to be at the Jewish community of Sedona in the Verde Valley over there on Highway 179, Sunday, June 9th. These four legislators. Let me let you know who's coming: Senator Katie Hobbs, Representative Martin Quezada, Representative August Jamasita. Pestikai, thank you. Stephanie Mock.
My Hopi is not real good, but I think
exactly. I'm sorry, but anyway, the representative.
We apologize, folks.
Yes, we apologize to all of these people. I didn't prepare to read their names.
So that's going to be a forum, and Mike and I are just really going to sort of facilitate it, and we're going to talk about Democratic perspective in Arizona. Where can things go?
Well, it's once again getting back to the area where we're much more comfortable with, and that's the negative. I mean, education. The three subjects that these legislators and the moderators are going to lead them through are education, the environment, and healthcare.
In Arizona.
You couldn't be alive in Arizona and not be aware of the struggle going down on with between the governor and the legislature about Medicaid, about expanding to 300,000 Arizonans some health care because it makes economic sense, by the way. Not necessarily, not forget about
yeah I you, don't think that
this
the
is
governor
utopian
is
thinking here
in favor of this because of her deep compassionate heart. I think she's in favor because the whole hospital and medical thing has said, hey, wait a minute, you know, this is going to improve everything here in Arizona. It's going to provide a lot of business, a lot of money, and we can work with a whole lot of people we haven't been able to help before. Also, we'll get paid for stuff we do instead of getting people coming into the emergency room and
absolutely
then not having any money, and then the next guy with any money who comes into the emergency room sort of picks up the tab.
So we're going to talk about what's going on down there with that. And if you have any involvement in education in Arizona, other than just simply driving by some of the beautiful buildings, I mean, that's your involvement. You know, it's not doing so well. It's the state support is being pulled out of education left and right. And
Democrats, the Red Rock has a free movie night, and the next one is Wednesday, June 5th at 6 p.m. at the Sedona Public Library.
This is a good one.
The movie's called Genetic Roulette, The Gamble of Our Lives. I'm not sure I'm a big anti-genetically modified food, but what's happening is we're modifying all this food and nobody's looking at the process, nobody looking at what it means, and nobody looking really at the impact. Well, and there's this huge pressure to go with it because it makes a lot of money, right?
Well, yeah, and it's interesting how, you know, so many European governments and agencies and organizations have banned genetically modified foods, and I'd like to know why. I'd like to know why Monsanto, let's go ahead and name a name here, seems to have such free rein here. They talk about the Monsanto Protection Act and whatnot, the biggest purveyor of genetically modified foods. So we have that movie coming up. When is it again? At the Sedona Library?
Wednesday, June 5th, just a couple of days, 6 p.m. It's the public library.
Yeah.
And it's called Genetic Roulette. I haven't seen it, but it sounds interesting.
And it's free.
And it's free.
All right.
Envisioning real utopias.
Yeah.
Well, in a real utopia, we'd actually have Eric right on the phone.
But if you want to hear all of our shows, we can go to vvid.org. Vvid.org is all our podcasts. And you can sort some of these things out. And we have What do we have coming up? Do we have anything interesting?
Next week, Sandy Barr. Sandy Barr is the director of the Sierra Club.
Yeah.
She'll be on this next Monday. It's a really interesting discussion of environmental issues in Arizona, focused on Arizona and northern Arizona issues. Been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.